48. The Foolish Man. George had stolen some money, but the police had caught him and he had been put in prison. Now his trial was about to begin, and he felt sure that he would be found guilty and sent to prison for a long time. Then he discovered that an old friend of his was one of the members of the jury at his trial. Of course, he didn't tell anybody, but he managed to see his friend secretly one day. He said to his friend, "Jim, I know that the jury will find me guilty of having stolen the money. I cannot hope to be found not guilty of taking it. But I should be grateful to you for the rest of my life if you could persuade the other members of the jury to add a strong recommendation for mercy to their statement that they consider me guilty." "Well, George," answered Jim, "I shall certainly try to do what I can for you as an old friend, but of course I cannot promise anything. The other 11 people on the jury look terribly strong-minded to me." George said that he would quite understand if Jim was not able to do anything for him, and thanked him warmly for agreeing to help. The trial went on, and at last the time came for the jury to decide whether George was guilty or not. It took them 5 hours, but in the end they found George guilty, with a strong recommendation for mercy. Of course, George was very pleased, but he didn't have a chance to see Jim for some time after the trial. At last, however, Jim visited him in prison, and George thanked him warmly and asked him how he had managed to persuade the other members of the jury to recommend mercy. "Well, George," Jim answered, "as I thought, those 11 men were very difficult to persuade, but I managed it in the end by tiring them out. Do you know, those fools had all wanted to find you not guilty."
49. Where is the teacher? Class 5A was the worst class in Hill Valley High School. The students were badly behaved and had no interest in their lessons. When a new principal came to work at the school, he decided to do something about Class 5A. On the second day of school, he left his office and walked to 5A's classroom. He did not need to know where it was. He could hear them. They were making a terrible noise. He stood outside the classroom for a few moments and looked inside through the window. He was disgusted by what he saw. Some boys were fighting. Other students were throwing things at one another. No one was doing any work. The principal had experienced badly behaved classes before. He knew what to do. He would go into the classroom, take hold of the biggest boy in the class, and punish him. This would be an example to the others. He took a deep breath and opened the classroom door. The students paid no attention to him. "Silence!" he shouted at the top of his voice. This time, the students stopped what they were doing and looked at him. Quickly, he walked up to the oldest-looking boy in the room. He was also the noisiest and had been shouting at the others at the top of his voice. He took hold of him by the ear and pulled him to the front of the class. "I am going to punish you as an example to the others," he said. "Now go to my office and wait for me." Then he turned to the class and lectured them about how they should behave in school. When he had finished, he said, "Does anyone have any questions?" One of the students put up her hand. "Yes, sir, I have. When can we have our teacher back?"
50. The bag they missed. The police received a report that 6 men had stopped a van. The van was carrying factory wages, and the men had attacked the driver. They had tied him up and had stolen one of the bags. After searching for 3 hours, the police found the van near the river. The driver was sitting on a bag in the van, and his hands were tied behind his back. The thieves had tied a handkerchief round his mouth so that he wouldn't shout. The police climbed into the back of the van and freed the driver. Then they asked him what had happened. "I was stopped soon after I left the bank," the driver explained. "6 men stopped my van and made me drive to the river." "If you shout," one of them said, "we'll shoot you." When I got to the river, they tied me up. Then they threw me into the back of the van. There were 2 bags in the back, and the thieves took one of them. "How much money did the bag contain?" a police officer asked. "It didn't contain any money at all," the driver laughed. "It was full of letters. This one contains all the money. I've been sitting on it for 3 hours.
51. The Smuggler. Sam Lewis was a customs officer. He used to work in a small border town. It wasn't a busy town, and there wasn't much work. The road was usually very quiet, and there weren't many travelers. It wasn't a very interesting job, but Sam liked an easy life. About once a week, he used to meet an old man. His name was Draper. He always used to arrive at the border early in the morning in a big truck. The truck was always empty. After a while, Sam became suspicious. He often used to search the truck, but he never found anything. One day, he asked Draper about his job. Draper laughed and said, "I'm a smuggler." Last year, Sam retired. He spent his savings on an expensive holiday. He flew to Bermuda and stayed in a luxurious hotel. One day, he was sitting by the pool, and opposite him, he saw Draper drinking champagne. Sam walked over to him. "Hello there."
"Hi."
"Do you remember me?"
"Yes, of course. You're a customs officer."
"I used to be, but I'm not anymore. I retired last month. I often searched your truck, but I didn't find anything."
"Can I ask you something?
Were you a smuggler?"
"What were you smuggling?"
"If you were."
"Of course I was.
The truck was always empty because I was smuggling trucks.
52. Where to find a listener? Mr. Adamson enjoys playing the violin in his leisure time. He is often carried away by his music, but it is a terrible time for his neighbors when Mr. Adamson plays, as he does so badly. One day, Mr. Adamson sat by a window and began to play the violin as usual. Mr. Adamson seemed to be making noises instead of music. However, Mr. Adamson was absorbed. Just then, some stones were thrown out of the window under which Mr. Adamson was sitting, but he did not pay attention to it. The music continued. After a little while, an empty bottle and a worn-out shoe were thrown out of the window, too. Mr. Adamson knew that this was not the place for him. The neighbors did not like his music. Mr. Adamson was very sad. He was badly hurt. Perhaps no living people can understand my music. I should go to a place where people may appreciate my works. So he decided to go to a graveyard. He came to a graveyard where there was no other sound except the church toll. The yard was a heaven where dead people rest. Mr. Adamson sat at a grave and thought a lot. I must do my best to show that my music is outstanding. He was inspired and began to play his violin. Suddenly, a bare foot stretched out from the grave and gave Mr. Adamson a kick which sent him flying. His treasured violin also dropped from his hand. Mr. Adamson felt very sad because his works were not accepted by anyone, not even the dead.
53. The Shopping List. Mrs. Black was having a lot of troubles with her skin, so she went to her doctor about it. He could not find anything wrong with her, however, so he sent her to the local hospital for tests. The hospital, of course, sent the results of the test directly to Mrs. Black's doctor, and next morning he telephoned her to give her a list of the things that he thought she should not eat, as any of them might be the cause of her skin trouble. Mrs. Black carefully wrote all the things down on a piece of paper, which she then left beside the telephone while she went out to a ladies' meeting. When she got back home 2 hours later, she found her husband waiting for her. He had a big basket full of packages beside him, and when he saw her, he said, "Hello, dear. I have done all your shopping for you." "Done all my shopping?" she asked in surprise. "Well, I found your shopping list beside the telephone, so I went to the shops and bought everything you had written down," answered her husband.
54. Part-time job hunting. "Hello, Professor Dennis. My name is Susan Adams. I read in the university newspaper that you're looking for a student to work as a language laboratory assistant.
Yes, we are. Are you interested in the job?
I think so. But before I apply, I'd like you to tell me more about the work.
Have you worked with tape recorders before?
I used cassette recorders a lot when I studied French in high school.
Good. There are many different kinds of language labs. Ours is a small one. It is fairly easy to operate. This is the main control panel. You can set the controls to allow students to listen to the lessons they want to hear. If you decide to take the job, I'll explain how the system operates. Most of the lessons are on cassette tapes, but some of them are also on long reel tapes or on records. The cassettes are kept in order on these shelves, and they are clearly marked with the language and lesson number. For example, the cassettes in the green boxes are French lessons. Records and long tapes are over there.
How many hours would I work?
We need someone 10 hours a week, Monday through Friday, from 4 to 6 p.m. That's one of the busiest times for this laboratory.
I'll fill out an application for the job right now, if it would fit in my class schedule nicely.
Fine. I'll get back to you a week or so after we review the applications.
55. Career selection. Has your son chosen his career yet, Mrs. Young? What is he going to do when he leaves college? Is he going to be a doctor like his father? Oh, no. He's decided not to be a doctor. He's seen the hard life of a doctor. Mrs. Black, he's made up his mind to be an engineer.
Oh, that's very interesting. A mechanical engineer, like my husband?
No, not that sort. Of course, Patrick is very interested in cars, too, but he isn't going to make them.
There are several kinds of engineers, aren't there? Electrical engineers, chemical engineers?
Oh, no. Patrick is taking a general course on civil engineering at the university. You know, a civil engineer is a man who makes roads and bridges and that sort of thing. When he's finished the course, he'll take a special course on water supply.
Oh, how interesting! Does he intend to go abroad?
Oh, yes. When he's finished his education, perhaps he'll take a job abroad. There are a lot of opportunities for water supply engineers, especially in underdeveloped countries.
56. An interview. Let's discuss your educational background. Miss Kelly, you were an English major, weren't you?
Yes, that's right. It was my best subject at college.
Fine. And could you tell me what kind of work experience you had?
My last position was with Loomis and Martin. That's a law firm in Sacramento.
And when was that exactly?
From 1999 to 2003. Before that, I worked for Bishop and Baldwin. That was from 1997 to 1999. And I've been doing freelance work for the last few months.
Well, Miss Kelly, your qualifications for the job are excellent. Could you tell me what kind of salary are you expecting?
Well, in my last job, I was making $1,500 a month. I understand that this position has a starting salary of around $1,600 a month.
That's right.
That would be fine with me.
And is there anything you'd like to ask about the job?
Yes. I'd like to know if the company provides opportunities for further education.
Yes. Our employees are allowed to take up to 6 hours a week at full pay to attend college courses.
That's very generous.
Is there anything else you'd like to know?
No, not at this time.
Well, I've enjoyed meeting and talking with you. We'll call you within the week. 57. The old people can be active. After retiring from 30 years of teaching, Elizabeth Pepper could easily have decided to sit back and relax and enjoy a peaceful retirement. But that kind of life is not for Elizabeth Pepper. I just want to do something different. If you want to participate in life, do it. Don't just sit down and look out of the window, she says. At 68, she decided to become one of the pioneers participating in a program at the University of California. The program offers campus housing and classes to people over 60. She enrolled in a class called Human Relationships and Diverse Society. I taught my minority students in my English and drama classes in high school for 20 years. But in this course, I have found out a lot about other cultures I didn't know then. One of the most important lessons that I'm learning is to perceive, not to judge. Elder adults can add to the educational resources of university by bringing a lot of valuable experience. Their coming on campus helps break some long beliefs of aging. Young students may have fears of growing older, but that kind of fear can be reduced as they see that older people can be active, healthy, and contribute to society. The younger students can begin to see aging as a natural part of life.
58. Choosing careers. Parents generally believe it is their responsibility to plan the careers for their children. They claim that they know their children well enough to decide what kind of job suits them, hoping that their children will go in for professions that will bring them the greatest prestige and economic benefit. Many parents think that their children are too young to see this for themselves. There are some parents who even expect their children to take over the careers of their fathers. For these reasons, many parents insist that their children should obey them in choosing careers. But many children suggest that they should be left free to choose their own careers. For one thing, parents and children may not share the same interest. A job that appeals to parents is likely to be boring for their children. For another, Children have been brought up in a different age from their parents, and therefore they should be allowed to cultivate a spirit of independence and self-reliance. In short, children should be free to make their own decisions as to future careers. In my opinion, in this case, as in many other things, mutual understanding is important. On the one hand, parents' view does reflect their concern for the well-being of their children. On the other hand, after all, it is children who will be doing the jobs. Therefore, it will be wise for parents to give them this freedom, while children should consult their parents when it is necessary.
59. Interview. Interview has become one of the chief means in hiring new workers. For instance, it is a usual practice for a large company to have interviewed an applicant before deciding whether to accept him or not. This is also true of many factories and department stores. Through interviews, those institutions have selected the best people among the numerous applicants. Interview, as a means of selecting candidates, has a number of advantages over any other means. For one thing, through direct contact with the candidates, the employer may find out whether he is up to the general standard. Besides, the interviewer may further discover what qualities the young man has so that he may be given a position that suits him well. How to pass an interview successfully is certainly a concern for every young man who is looking for a good job. First, he should dress formally and present an impressive look. Besides, in the course of the interview, he must show good manners. Finally, he must respond to the interviewer's questions quickly and give correct answers to show that he is qualified for the job. By following these steps, that applicant will stand a good chance of success.